It's linebackers week. The quarterbacks of the defense, we're ranking the top 10 in the NFL and talking why the Browns are building around Jamie Collins, why New England needed to keep Dante Hightower in town, and the incredible amount of praise a certain Seahawk draws from players and coaches around the league. All that and much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramley.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramley. He is Andy Benoit, and we have reached the penultimate show of the position ranking series. We will have the finale with quarterbacks next week, but this week it is linebackers. You can call them stack linebackers, off the line of scrimmage linebackers, the sort of inside linebacker slash the dudes who basically aren't rush linebackers. That's who we're ranking this week.
Yep, exactly. And some of these guys occasionally line up outside, but you said it best. These are the non-pass rushing linebackers.
Well, let's, I'll give the usual spiel right here. We do this AP poll style, if you are joining us for the first time. Andy, myself, and our researcher this week, it is the great Katie Sharp. We all submit our top 15 lists, and then we combine them. If a player gets a first-place vote, that is 15 points. Second-place vote, 14 points. All the way down to 15th-place vote gets 1 point. We combine the rankings. Andy's vote count double, because he is that smart about football. And that's how we come up with our top 10, which we will unveil right now. At the end of the show, we will give you some of the others receiving votes. Lots of votes this week. 23 guys got votes. So we'll probably talk about a name or two down there. But right now, we're going to jump right into it.
Number 10.
That is Jamie Collins, Cleveland Browns. Andy, we used to talk a ton about Jamie Collins when he was a member of the New England Patriots. And then they traded him, and we talked a ton about the trade. And then we talked a ton about the Patriots after the trade. But we didn't really talk about Collins as a Cleveland Brown last year. Kind of rightfully so. They were an 0-4 team until late in the season. But what did you think of Collins' play with the Browns last season?
Well, his role with then, let's remember, they've changed defensive coordinators, so this could be a little bit academic, but his role in their base package, he played outside linebacker, which a lot of times he wound up having essentially the same responsibilities as a weak side defensive end. That's how a lot of these 3-4 schemes play out anymore. But what matters, Gary, and we're going to probably mention this throughout the show, it's your nickel position. Where do you play in the nickel package? That's 65% of the snaps. And in nickel, he was a stack linebacker, an inside linebacker, which is what he did in New England. I thought he was a little hit or miss with his assignments. You want to be a little careful about evaluating a guy like that, especially when he joins midseason, because you might not always fully understand the context of his assignments. But I think Collins, I think when we're talking, if we're going to talk about Jamie Collins as a top 10 guy, the discussion has to begin and probably end just with the physical traits, the athleticism, and a coach can figure out how to use those. I don't think Collins is a traditional linebacker like a Sean Lee or a Bobby Wagner, where they are just so pristine at playing the position. I think Collins is an athlete out there who needs to be used a certain way.
Yeah, you're not going to like this question, Andy, but I'll ask you anyway. The sort of trickle of information that came out of New England after they traded him last year was maybe he wasn't so disciplined with assignments. There was also contract stuff, and maybe that played into it too, but they kind of didn't see him as reliable enough in the end, and to an extent they were proven right. I mean, they won the Super Bowl, so even if they weren't proven 100% right, they were proven right enough. Did you get that sense at all watching him on tape that it was problematic? He maybe, I know you don't know the specific calls, but maybe he wasn't in the right place at the right time?
Well, remember Mike Lombardi tweeting out the play where Jamie Collins missed a gap assignment? I forget which game it was in. I want to say, I'm going to guess it wrong, but it was a big thing on Twitter for a while. Lombardi took a shot at Collins. He said, yeah, he's undisciplined. And the assignment or the play that he gave out, that was he was exactly right. I mean, there were times where Collins would do his own thing, And the Patriots hate that because they believe that the scheme and the fundamentals of the scheme, that's what will work. That's why they substitute so many guys. That's why they're willing to let guys leave, because they view it as an 11-man entity rather than 11 different entities. And so Collins can be his own entity at times. I think, and we'd have to like go back and look at the order of things. I don't know, because this is going to matter, but let's look at how things ultimately played out. Remember, the Patriots acquired Kyle Van Noy midseason. Mm-hmm. He wound up being a very good sub-package player for them. He was not good in coverage as a Lion. New England saw something different in him. Maybe the Lions are more of a zone scheme. New England's a lot more man-to-man. Maybe that was it. Whatever it was, New England felt he could be a sub-package player, a nickel-dime guy for him. And he did quite well with that. And then Shea McClellan was the base linebacker, and Dante Hightower is the guy they don't take off the field. So they already have other linebackers to use. They realize that Hightower's contract is also going to expire, and the reality mm-hmm. is they're probably not going to be able to sign two stack linebackers. They can't invest that much of a percentage of their cap. So then it becomes, well, do we want Hightower or Collins? Hightower's the guy that does everything right. He might not be the athlete Collins is, but he's more Belichickian than Collins was. And I would imagine if Hightower weren't in a contract year, the Jamie Collins decision would have been evaluated differently, but they had to choose between those guys, and they probably felt that McClellan and Kyle Van Noy could pick up, and a Landon Roberts. Remember how well he played at times when he was on the field last season? So I mean, does that make sense? I'm kind of guessing here, but does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, look, the contract situation certainly makes sense, the way it played out. You know, when they made the deal last year, we all kind of said, well, wow, you know, this is a team. How many more years you have with Tom Brady? How much longer? And not that the championship window is going to slam shut when Brady's done. They'll still be a good team. But, you know, realistically, how much longer are you going to be the best team in the AFC by, you know, the leaps and bounds that you can be because of Tom Brady? So when they dealt Collins, it was a little bit like, oh, you know, a little bit surprised they were thinking that far ahead at that point. And look, we didn't really know that Shea McClellan and Kyle Van Noy, two guys who really were not good players in their previous stops, even though they were high draft picks, we probably didn't recognize how effective they could be. But, yeah, I don't know. I think for a lot of people too, when you look all the way back to the, what was it? It was the 2015 season, the AFC title game where Collins got beat a couple of times by Owen Daniels in Denver. In the game they lost to Peyton Manning and the Broncos. So you just wonder, you know, does it sort of add up? And then when you throw in the contract situation, that was probably enough to make them pull the trigger. But I guess the surprising thing in the end is they really didn't fall off. That's kind of the nature of the position and where we are in football right now. You lose one linebacker and you're not going to fall off too badly. But they really didn't fall off at all after Collins left last year.
What's interesting, and that you're right, that's a good point about that AFC Championship game, because going into that, Belichick had emphasized significantly the importance of Owen Daniels in the red zone, or as Belichick calls it, the red area. And that's where Collins still got beaten. If I recall, he had a matchup assignment with a safety over the top. So you really shouldn't be getting beat down the seams if there's a safety. I could be wrong, but I think that's what I remember. They have other options at linebacker, by the way, Gary. These guys we mentioned, Roberts is back. McClellan, I don't know if he'll make the team because they drafted Derek Rivers in the third round. Jonathan Freeney, who was a good sub-package player for him the year before last season, he's still on the roster. And, of course, they signed David Harris from the Jets. The money they paid him suggests that they plan on him being on the field a meaningful amount, and certainly in their base packages. Mm-hmm. So New England has come out, you could argue they traded Jamie Collins, and about two-thirds of a year later now, here they are significantly better and obviously deeper at linebacker still.
Yeah. And Collins, of course, moving away from the Patriots since he doesn't play for them anymore. He got his big deal in Cleveland, so you know, he's one of the guys they're going to keep around there. They're not going to do any funny business like they did with Terrell Pryor, maybe. And, he's going to be their, sort of a centerpiece of that defense for the next 3 or 4 years at least.
Number 9.
This is C.J. Mosley of the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know, Andy. I don't have a ton to add on Mosley. I feel like he's sort of been the same guy that he has been for his first what would it be four years in the league.
I think he's a really good pass defending linebacker, and especially in his own scheme. Some of the interceptions he had, and our listeners know interceptions aren't everything, but the interception he had, there was one against Kirk Cousins last year. I want to say it was week 5. And then the one that really stood out, one of the best plays of the season, was the interception that Mosley had in week 3 against Blake Bortles in the game in the win over Jacksonville. He has a great understanding of what's happening behind him. It's hard to cover what's behind you in zone. And as a linebacker, just by the nature of where you line up, oftentimes you have to do that. The teams are high-lowing you. They're putting one guy behind you and one guy in front of you, and they throw based on that reaction. Well, if you can understand what's behind you and you've got the athleticism that Mosley has, there are times where he'll defend the guy in front of him and still intercept the ball that's thrown behind him. That's exceptionally rare. That's what he does well. He's also good laterally in run defense. I think C.J. Mosley, the more I think about it, I think we're underrating him a little bit. He's a good, solid, athletic, every down NFL linebacker. Also a good blitzer on double-A gap concepts.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's, you know, the Ravens maybe slid back a little bit last year. Especially after the I don't want to say fast start. They weren't, you know, necessarily dominant wins, but they had a lot of wins early in the year, and then they sort of fell off, and I feel like they are sort of a forgotten about team at this point. But
I would not be surprised if Baltimore winds up 11-5, 12-4 this year. I'm not saying they will, but they're a better team than what indicated down the stretch last season.
Yeah. And look, they always just kind of they stick around. That's what they've done in the John Harbaugh years, for the most part. Is you know, they're always right there. Maybe not dominant because the offense isn't necessarily the most explosive, but yeah, they're always right there in the thick of things in the AFC North.
Number 8.
This is Dante Hightower. He's a little bit different than the rest of these guys on the list in that maybe he's not the same type of athlete, the same type of guy you could use in coverage like the other 9 guys are on the list as we unveil them here.
You know what's unique about New England, and one of the reasons they're hard to play against, the way they line up, they basically put 5 guys up on the defensive line. Other team, we're talking on base downs even, not just, you know, we've talked about 5 across, what the Houston Texans do. New England will do that on first and second down at times. So what they basically do is run a 5-1. And that puts a lot of stress on that one, that linebacker. Hightower is very good within both realms of this. He can be up on the line of scrimmage and be effective, and he can be that solo stack linebacker that has a little bit more ground to cover because he's the only guy back there. It's not like they're asking the world of him, because those 4-2 fronts versus 5-1, you still often have the same gap assignments. You're just lining up in different spots, so you're getting to your assignments at a different time in the play. But I don't think they could play this way and do that with their fronts and diversify their fronts on so many downs. Teams will move their fronts around on third down. New England diversifies on every down. I don't think they could do that as effectively if they didn't have a guy like Hightower.
Yeah, and obviously, as we talked about during the Collins discussion, he's, you know, Hightower is the guy they chose to keep around. He made a couple of huge plays in the Super Bowl. It's just like I said, you look at the list here, and all these guys are sort of, you know, leave them on the field in nickel packages because they can cover. They can cover a running back, cover a tight end in man coverage here. Hightower doesn't quite fit into that role, but he's still on the field for every down.
Yeah, he's almost always, when possible, he is the free defender. And because New England does not blitz a bunch, and when they do, they tend to rush 5, they don't bring 6, then often he can be a free defender. They don't need him matching up, and that gets back to why they traded for Kyle Van Noy, or why when they had before Van Noy, the Collins was important, because they need an athlete to be that pass defender. That's not Collins' style. He's not a twitchy, multi-directional athlete. I think he's more athletic than he appears on the surface, but his best use is as a north-south almost an old school type of linebacker. Yeah. But real quick, during that 5-1 front, the reason that's such an advantage is because you can still play two safeties back deep. And it's unusual to see a five-man front with two safeties deep. Usually you only can keep one safety back if you're playing some sort of five-man front.
Well, why are they able to do that in New England?
It's just the structure. It gets back again. I think they trust Hightower a lot. And It's just, you know, it's so much of its presentation. So it's the structure of how they play it. They're aggressive in their run defense. They attack you. It's funny because they're a bend but don't break defense overall. If you watch them, they don't do a lot of different stuff schematically until you get to about the 30-yard line when you get in comfortable field goal range. That's when they start changing things up. And even then, they're pretty selective with what they do. So they're a bend but don't break defense. But at the same time, they're an aggressive defense. They don't line up and react to what they do. They go after. They attack gaps. They shoot gaps. They try to make the offensive line and the running back react to them. That's an unusual combination. Usually a bend but don't break defense. You think those Tampa 2, Indianapolis Colts of the early 2000s, those type of zone teams where they line up in soft shells and just try to keep you to 3 or 4 yards. That's not New England's game. They're a different type of defense.
Yeah, and it kind of gets back to, you know, the whole basic game theory type of thing where, you know, it's something you don't expect. It's something you're not used to because you don't see it across the league, and the Patriots do that really on both sides of the ball. That's kind of where they find their, I don't know if efficiency is the right word, but the fact that they do things so much differently is what gives them a little bit of an edge in a league that tends to be, you know, in some cases, a little bit too copycat.
Yeah, and the important guys for them are the defenders up on the edge setters. Rob Ninkovich, think of those guys. He's not there anymore, but Jabal Sheard, former Brown, now he's a Colt. He was very good for them. Mm-hmm. I think Lawrence Guy, who they got from Baltimore, can be good. If you're going to play a 5-1, you need to set the edge, because if you only have one linebacker, you don't have enough bodies chasing to the perimeter if the ball gets outside. So those guys that set the edge are very important, too. They're not going to make our top 10 list, unfortunately, any of them. Mm-hmm. Rob Ninkovich will never be that, but he is a very important player within the design of the scheme.
Number 7.
This is Ryan Shazier. You know, Lawrence Timmons is gone in Pittsburgh, so Shazier probably elevates to, you know, an even more important role in the Steelers' defense. He was kind of, and there are a couple other guys we'll talk about on this list who is like this, who are like this. He's one of those guys, you know, he sits at, what, like 225, 230 or something like that. He's not necessarily what you think of as, as sort of a guy you put on the field in early down situations, a thumper type of guy. But I mean, he is a violent player.
Yeah, that's a great word for it. He is violent. And if it's possible to play too fast, and it is, Shazier would be the guy that has to walk that fine line. And I'm talking from an every down standpoint. He is fast at everything he does. His hands are quick. His change of direction is fast and fluid and like a fish almost. And he has a great acceleration ability. He can go from 0 to 60. So he's a fast guy. And what's unusual is he's the green dot guy. And he's the guy that's making the calls. He has a lot to read. So he has a lot to process mentally. And that is a very complex matchup zone scheme in Pittsburgh. And they're diverse with how they use their linebackers, because when they get to their blitzes, the linebackers line up in different spots. They disguise blitzes and go to coverage out of it. You're doing a lot of stuff if you're playing inside linebacker for the Steelers. Shazier is young. He's been learning to play the game at the best tempo, maximum speed, but without being reckless and out of control. And somewhere within all of that, he's also been able to be the field general. That's incredible when you put it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you mentioned he does play a little too fast. Football Outsiders pegged him for 20 missed tackles last year, which was the most in the NFL. And then, of course, the other problem he's had early in his career is just staying on the field. You know, 13 games last year was his career high so far over the first three seasons of his career. So, yeah, be nice if he stayed out there.
Something to keep in mind. No, those football, and I like football. I used to work for Aaron Schatz at Football Outsiders. I love him over there. Missed tackles, though, if you're faster than everyone, you're probably putting yourself in position to make more tackles than other guys even would.
Yeah.
And those still won't be ideal tackles. So I wonder how many times Shazier, he had an arm tackle, he didn't get there, but if it had been someone else, the guy wouldn't have even touched the running back, and we never would have said, well, he missed a tackle, because he wouldn't have been in consideration.
Very good point, Andy. Understanding the stats better.
Number six.
This is Thomas Davis, still going strong here. I mean, he's for a guy who's had catastrophic knee injuries, two or three of them in his career. He's still a legitimate franchise player in Carolina.
He's better now than before his injuries. Still, we've been saying that for a few years now. I wonder at what point they need to get Shaq Thompson on the field in Carolina. He's going into his third season. He's their best athlete. He's even better athletically than Luke Kuechly. At what point does Davis's role get reduced in order to make room for Shaq Thompson? Last season, you know what they did, Gary? At least on first and second down, even against three wide receiver sets, they just kept all their linebackers on. They played a base 4-3 against three receiver sets. That's how athletic Davis and Thompson are. They are rangy, and Luke Kuechly, they're rangy, fast linebackers. It's a zone scheme, so they don't always have to match up one-on-one against wide receivers. They can cover ground, so they can play base in Carolina against your three receiver sets. Now, there were times that backfired still. Brandon Cooks ran by these linebackers a few times in the second Saints game. But they have an abundance of speed here. Thomas Davis is still part of it. Do you think his role, though, gets reduced this season? They've talked about that.
I mean, look, I when they took Shaq Thompson, I think they were thinking, Shaq Thompson redshirt year in 2015, and then he'll see a lot of the field in the 2016 when Thomas Davis is 33 years old and starting to slow down. But I don't know. I don't know if you can. I feel like it's a very fragile mix in that Panthers defense right now, especially with the changeover in the secondary. And we're going to see this year. You'd expect some of these young cornerbacks make improvements, but there's no guarantee there. So, I feel like if I were running this defense, I'd be hesitant to make any sort of big change with one of my sort of veteran rocks. Unless he really looks like he's lost a step early in the year, and certainly there's been no indication of that so far.
Yeah. I wonder if they would consider putting him on the edge and rushing the passer a little bit. I think he could do that, and they don't have a lot of defensive ends. I'm not saying every down, but 5-10 times a game, and they probably have done it 2 or 3 times a game. But I think he did that at Georgia a little bit. Remember, he was one of these hybrid safety type of guys in college coming out. Really the first of that breed of safety linebackers that are now so common. He did it 10 years before anyone else was really doing it. That secondary, this gets back. Here's why Thomas Davis and obviously Luke Kuechly is going to be on this list. Here's why they're going to be on the list. When you are fast at linebacker in a zone scheme, you can cover more ground. And when you have as much awareness and play recognition as Kuechly and Davis, you cover that ground efficiently. So now you're covering even more ground. You can play with bigger zone voids then. You can drop back and give yourself more room in front of you because you have the ability to make up that room when the ball is thrown. Well, if you're dropping back further as a linebacker, that's less area for your zone defenders in the secondary to account for. And that's why they can go with these old man safeties. Mike Adams is their new safety. He's 36 years old. Kurt Coleman, who I love, he's in his 30s as well. They can go brains over brawn at safety because there's less physical demand on those guys because of how good the linebackers are in front of them.
Yeah. Look, Shaq Thompson is exactly the type of player that Thomas Davis was in college, too. So it made all the sense in the world for them to bring in Thompson as sort of the heir apparent to Thomas Davis. But, like I said, I don't want to say shaky on the back end with the corners and safeties, but I want to have some optimism that the young guys get better.
The young guys will be as good as the front seven is. And the front seven was inconsistent in the down four, the pass rush last season. And so there was more pressure on the young secondary. And any secondary that plays zone as much as Carolina does, they're not going to last if the pass rush doesn't get there. This defense is all about the front seven.
Yeah.
We like Bradbury, though, right? James Bradbury. We both like James Bradbury at corner.
We like Bradbury, so that's one. But, yeah, we'll see. And look, Josh Norman was pretty shaky early in his career when he was here in Carolina.
Oh, he was horrible. You're right. He was horrible early in his career.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coach him up and see how it goes here. But, yeah, I don't know. I think – I look at Davis and I just think they're not going to take him off the field. They're not going to reduce his role unless it is clear that they absolutely have to reduce his role. And, that might still be a year or two away.
You think it'll be more about Davis, less about Thompson, then, the decision in playing time, if it comes down to those two this season?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, we're talking Thomas Davis right now. We're both saying he's the sixth best linebacker in all of football. You don't take the sixth best at any position and reduce his role because you drafted someone to take over and you thought it would happen sooner than it has. You ride the best until he's no longer one of the best.
Number five.
This is Telvin Smith. And look, speed has been a common thread throughout the show so far. And Telvin Smith, can I say Telvin Smith is the fastest linebacker in football?
I called it the athletic rangiest, which is probably the editor in you wants to pull his hair out at that awkward, awful contortion of words. I mean, it's just a lot of syllables.
Yeah.
But he covers ground. I think Shazier, if you race these two, Shazier would win. He's faster. Luke Kuechly probably plays faster, certainly mentally. Not that Smith isn't good in that realm, but Kuechly's off the charts. But when you add Telvin Smith's body structure and his gait, the amount of ground he covers in his stride, I think he stands out as the fastest down-to-down linebacker, pursuit linebacker in the NFL.
He's built like a wide receiver. I mean, he's
kind of is.
What is he? He's 6'3", and they list him at 218, which is...
Is that all he's listed at? No
he's
way.
He's listed as 218 here. Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's wrong. That can't possibly be. 6'3", 218. Are you sure you're not looking up like Allen Robinson on the Jags roster?
NFL.com now lists him at 215.
So he's losing weight.
So he is. He's finally trimming down.
He'll be down to 210 at the end of the show.
He's going with the Atkins diet and cutting out the carbs and it's really showing here. Yeah, Jaguars.com also has him at 215 right now. I mean
Wow.
That's an absurd build for a linebacker, even in the modern game.
Yeah, I didn't know he's slender. He's lanky, let's call it. That's probably better than slender in the NFL. I didn't know he was that. What's the word you wouldn't let me use anymore, Gary?
Lithe. You want to call
willowy.
Everyone lithe.
No, willowy. Remember willowy?
Willowy, sorry. Yeah, willowy. We didn't let you call Chandler Jones lithe, I think is what it came down to. But
willowy, then also
yes.
You and Mark Moravec would not let me keep using the word willowy. And then you sent me pictures of what willowy is, and there was all these models from the 1930s.
Doris Day. Doris Day was the first result for willowy. No, because you were calling it was like... Toilolo, maybe you were calling willowy. It was,
It was a tight end for the Falcons. You're right. Yeah, it was him. It was tight.
It's not the right word.
No, that one that just needs to be tall. Toilolo's 6'8". That's why he's willowy.
Yeah. But
Telvin Smith, I didn't know he was that thin. I mean, I think he's pretty good at filling, though. Like Deion Jones, for example, he's undersized in Atlanta. He's 220. When you put on the film, there are times that you see him, frankly, getting run over. When he has to step up between the tackles and fill the hole, the running back's going to get 2 yards falling forward on that guy. I don't think you see that with Telvin Smith very often. It doesn't stand out the same way. So he might be 218, but he does not play light at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, weight-wise, he's got to be, I think Deion Buchanan is probably lighter, but I can't imagine anyone else being in that range, the sub-220 range that I can think of off the top of my head right now.
Yeah, you're right, and Buchanan, I bet he is lighter, and he's fast too. Buchanan's he didn't make. Did anyone vote for Buchanan on our list?
Yeah, he got a vote. You voted for him.
Top, I did. Top 15.
Yeah, 14.
Well, good. All right.
There you go. So
he's hard to match up against. That's why teams have trouble blocking Buchanan in zone. They can't get their centers aren't fast enough to get up to him.
Yeah.
And so he's a real mismatch creator. But we could probably say that about a lot of them. I mean, Telvin Smith is faster than Buchanan from a playing standpoint in the box. So we could say that about a lot of these guys.
Yeah. Well, why does it I mean, logically, if you're a if you're an NFL offense that maybe is between identities, doesn't have a clear identity at this point. I mean, are we going to see more teams just getting big mauling offensive linemen and a 230-pound back and going that way? Can you do that against teams that have a Buchanan or a Telvin Smith and just say, we're just gonna steamroll you here, or is there something schematically that would undermine that?
That's an interesting point you make, Gary, because you're right. We're talking the linebackers are getting smaller and faster. And the response to that is, okay, we're going to put big bodies right down the middle of the field and run over them. Speed doesn't matter when you're trying to go through a 300-pound blocker, 320-pound blocker. So you could be onto something. We could see more of that. Why wouldn't you? I was going to say the one complicating factor is it doesn't always match up well to a spread offense, which more teams are becoming, but I don't think that's true. I think it's fine. Inside, you're talking about inside zone running, which is just between the tackles, couple of double team blocks, someone works off the double team up to those small linebackers. It's what people think of when they think of just basic running in the NFL. And that would be a good response to the speed at linebacker, because the reason linebackers are getting smaller and faster is so many teams are doing outside zone running where they stretch to the perimeter and look for one hole to cut up. That's the response on defense is we got to get faster at linebacker, while now the response on offense is we get bigger in the offensive line. So you could be onto something there. And all of these blocking schemes we're talking about, they're more likely to remain zone schemes rather than gap scheme runs, pull blockers, and think of the Carolina Panthers or last year the Buffalo Bills running game. Those gap scheme runs were more common back a few years ago because they're man-to-man blocking schemes, and now defenses change their fronts so much and they move guys around that it's hard to establish man-to-man assignments before the snap, and you have to do it before the snap. You can't change it after the snap because there's five offensive linemen that have to see it the same way. So, well, you can, but that's called zone blocking. Now you can become a full zone team to account for that. So, I bet you're right. I bet we see more inside zone than outside zone because of the nature of these linebackers and how fast they are.
That was really good because I was going to write into our mailbag show at some point asking why we basically man blocking is. I almost feel like it's an endangered species right now.
It is. Oh, it's definitely endangered.
Yeah.
It's hard because all the men are moving around on defense so much. It's hard to do man blocking. And teams so if you are a man blocking team, then the response to that, if you're a defense, is you want to do a lot of stuff that moves your guys. So stunts and twists that have guys starting off in one gap, crossing over to another gap. Movement on the defense is the response to gap scheme running. So the Carolina Panthers, they see a lot of weird amoeba type of stuff before and especially after the snap because they're a man-blocking team. You want to confuse those man-blocking assignments.
Yeah. Yeah. One more note before we jump ahead, thinking of Telvin Smith and the smaller guys. Deion Jones, I gave Deion Jones my 15th place vote here, so we'll read his name at the end of the show. But, I think back to that. I believe it was the first series of the Super Bowl where the Patriots had a third and short handed to LeGarrette Blount. And, Deion Jones plays at, 220, 225. He's given up something like 40 pounds to LeGarrette Blount, and he just stepped up and stoned him on the play. So it's kind of like these guys are light, but, it's kind of like who we talked about with Ross Tucker a couple weeks ago. You don't necessarily have to be, you don't have to be carrying a ton of weight. If your technique is sound and you're strong in the right places, you can... You play bigger than your listed weight, and that's certainly the case with a guy like Smith and with a guy like Deion Jones and
Well,
and really,
and the Falcons know the benefit of Deion Jones is he is fast, and it's a nickel league, so you're still seeing a lot more passes than you are run plays, and you need a guy that can handle those passes. That's why they drafted Jones. He can run with wide receivers at times out of certain zone assignments, and he can chase and get you in the open field. It's just when you get bodies around him that he's going to struggle, but they know that. And look who they went out and signed this year. In addition to Grady Jarrett, who they drafted and played well, they signed Dontari Poe. So these responses, let's find some big linemen that can at least give our smaller linebackers a chance to hang in there. And so you can still scheme around these guys. Just because Deion Jones is small, Telvin Smith is light, that doesn't mean you can't play with them. You just need to go out and sign Dontari Poe, or in the case of Jacksonville, they sign Calais Campbell, guys that mm-hmm. are bigger up front that can delay blockers' ability to get up to the linebackers.
Number four.
Well, let's jump ahead here to number four on the countdown. That is KJ Wright. I believe someone called him the most underrated player in the NFL, or just underrated linebacker in the NFL?
I think I said player. You're talking about what I wrote for the MMQB 400, which you just spoiled my boldest line of the whole thing now, and it's not coming out till August.
No.
I think he's underrated.
It'll be out next week. It'll be out the week of the 25th, July 25th.
All right. I probably should have known that, but that's why I handed in early. That's why.
There you go.
I was wondering why we were doing that with training camps in full swing, so we're not. That makes more sense. We rank the top 400 players right before all the training camps are in full swing.
That is correct.
KJ Wright does everything. That's what he's an everything linebacker. He is exactly what you want in a 4-3 scheme. In their case in Seattle, it's a 4-3 cover 3, but we've talked about it. They play more man-to-man at times. When they do play man-to-man, if there are two safeties back, then KJ Wright is the guy that has to guard the tight end. If it's one safety back, they don't do that as well. They do that. If it's one safety back, he'll likely take the running back, and Bobby Wagner becomes the blitzer. That's how they play there. But it doesn't. Whatever you ask KJ Wright to do, he does extremely well. He is just a good, solid, all around football player. He's a how-to video on film.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I feel like he almost gets. It's the old. He does everything well. And the natural progression is, everything well, nothing great type of thing. But it's kind of like he does everything very well, borderline great at this point.
I agree with you. And just because we've done so many handshake stories in these top 10 things, I'll give you my KJ Wright handshake story real quick. He had a sprained wrist. I don't know if it was a big enough deal to report, like on the injury report, or I guess in Seattle, we've learned they don't always report these things. But he had a sprained wrist last year, and so he refused to shake my hand. And I forgot at the end of the interview, so I tried to shake it again, and we had to go through that whole dance. He gave me a fist bump instead. He was kind about it, technically, on paper, we stood there and talked, and he refused to shake my hand at the end of the conversation. Pleasant conversation, though.
Oh, but you made it up to him by calling him the most underrated player in football in the upcoming MMQB 400, where Andy Benoit will rank the top 400 players in football. Look forward to that on the MMQB. We are about to delve into the top three on our countdown this list, but before we do, couple programming notes. Mailbag show coming up. We'll have quarterbacks next week, and then we will have the giant mailbag summer fun pool party blowout. As we said, I don't know, we started this 2 weeks ago, and the results have been nice. We're getting plenty of questions. You can send your question via Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. You can send it via Facebook. We're both on there. You can send it to talkback@themmqb.com. But if you want a 100% ironclad guarantee that we will, at the very least, address, and look, we always try to give good answers to questions. We're not dismissive of questions, and usually we get very good questions. We are guaranteeing we will address and probably answer well, but we will at least address your question if you leave it in an iTunes review. Leave a review, put your question in there. We will absolutely address it on the mailbag show that is coming up in 2 weeks now. That's our plea, and we will make that plea one more time next week. And if we, like we said, if we get 1,000 questions, then we will just have like a 27-hour show that week. We'll do it.
Well, we'll see. Yep, we'll see.
Well, handy coming to a 27-hour show, I'm telling you.
Number three.
The top three linebackers in football. Number three right here, this is Sean Lee. Just, hey, it's nice to see him on the field. I feel like mauaside from Luke Kuechly, he's just a guy who's always in the right spot at the right time. It seems like he just doesn't miss plays out there.
That's exactly right. I was watching film with a Cowboys coach, and there was a play where there's no way to know what happened without knowing somebody blew an assignment. It was either Sean Lee or another guy. I think I wrote this in MMQB 400. Sean Lee or another guy. And I asked the guy, well, how, you know, the coach, and he said, oh, it was the other guy that blew the assignment. And you say, how do you know? How can I tell? And he said, just understand that Sean Lee, if it's Sean Lee or the other guy, it's going to be the other guy. And I said, oh, like yeah. 9 times out of 10, it's the other guy. And he said, no, like 999 times out of 1,000, it's the other guy. It's not going to be Sean Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it was great to see him on the field for a full season last year. You know, he sat out the last game of the year, the meaningless game at the end. But, you know, it's a Cowboys defense. They're flawed. I mean, they're not an overly talented defense. And when Lee has been hurt the last couple of years, it's a huge difference. I mean, it's a monster drop-off. I feel like, you know, this is a little bit of a hot take, but I feel like at least of the guys on this list, and I might say of all the guys in the NFL, defensive players in the NFL, he's the one guy who his team can least afford to lose. And I guess you would maybe twist that into a most valuable type of thing, which it might kind of be, but... just the drop-off when he's off the field is so sharp.
They don't have a great defensive line in Dallas, and they understand that. So what they do, and part of this is just the way Rod Marinelli, their defensive coordinator, likes to play. But they do a lot of gap exchange stuff. And so what we mean by that are stunts and twists, or in their case, they do a lot of defensive line slants. So I'm a defensive lineman. I line up in the B gap, but I'm actually responsible for the A gap. And after the snap, I slant over to the A gap, and the guys around me also slant, and it's hard to play against that. And why Sean Lee's important is because if your defensive linemen are moving that way, your linebacker needs to be sturdy on the back end, because if somebody gets creased, the ball's going to get up to that linebacker quicker. That's part A. Part B is the linebacker has a different gap assignment than what he lined up in because everybody's changing their gaps. So you have to have speed and awareness at that position to play for Dallas. That's why Sean Lee's so valuable. The other thing is when they get into their coverage concepts, Lee, as often, he'll be on the running back at times, but where he's best is as a free defender, where he can be either a blitzer or a presence in the middle of the field. And Gary, there were, I don't know how many times last season I had in my notes, you have to be aware and alert of Sean Lee whenever he's a free defender, if you're an offense, because he is a difference maker. When he's not tethered to an assignment and he's just playing football, he's a big-time big play threat for an offense to have to worry about.
Number two.
Let's go number two right here, and this is Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner, you know, like all these guys, as we say, a tremendous athlete, tremendously fast, great play speed. If you want a really good inside football piece that sort of helps you understand Bobby Wagner and what a lot of these top linebackers are able to do mentally and how they function mentally. Jenny Vrentis had a great piece during Smarter Football Week. Headline is Bobby Wagner Can See Into the Future. That's sort of a look at Bobby Wagner as a coach on the field type of angle here.
Well, Jenny, there's two quick stories we can tell that tell the story on Bobby Wagner, because we talk about Seattle's scheme all the time. I feel like people understand that. And we've already said Wagner either takes the running back in coverage, or most often he's a blitzer when they do man-to-man in Seattle. But Jenny, when she was assigned to find a smart guy on the field, who's the smartest player on the field, and we're going to talk to him about the nuances of football. That was her assignment. And she asked around. She's great at that. She knows who to ask. She asks a lot of people. And I think it was, I mean, I think almost everyone said it's Bobby Wagner, talked to Bobby Wagner. Mm-hmm. Remember 2 years ago, Gary, Michael McKnight for the magazine did a story on tackling and the importance of tackling and the statistic. And he was going around asking people within the NFL and asking, I mean, Adam Dorson, the editor, called me. I talked to Michael McKnight. His question was, who is the surest tackler in the league? And every single person he talked to told him, "Go, it's Bobby Wagner." That's the answer. So what we're talking about is the most fundamentally sound player, maybe of all defenders in the NFL.
Yeah. Whatever the superlatives are in the, you know, in the NFL yearbook, Bobby Wagner is going to win them. Vote of his peers here. I guess this is a little bit anticlimactic just because it was so expected. But we'll unveil number one here, which is, of course, Luke Kuechly.
Number one.
I don't know. Maybe there was some drama due to the concussion issues of the past couple seasons. But, yeah, Kuechly, I mean, look, he's still sort of class of his own. You know, maybe Wagner has narrowed the gap a little bit. But instinctually, he's just it's incredible. He the way he anticipates plays and he's just never wrong is, it is a sight to behold.
We hear the story you always hear when you're watching Panthers games on a national broadcast is the broadcasters say, "Oh, the coach has told us Luke Kuechly calls out about a third of your plays. He just calls them out before the snap." And I always ask NFC South coaches if that's true, because those are the guys that have to play Kuechly twice a year.
Yeah.
And every single – to a man, they all say it's absolutely true. There's no exaggeration. He's calling out a third of your plays, maybe more, before the snap. I don't know how he does that. I tried to find out. I asked to go watch a film with him for a piece 2 years ago. Was shut down by that, both by the PR staff and Kuechly himself, I imagine. He doesn't want to share it, but he has a way of figuring out what you're doing, and it's not as simple as just watching your formations and tendencies. That's a big part of it. My guess is he is really good at identifying little things with players. Who's leaning one way in a stance up front? Is a guy and as a left guard back on his heels a little bit? Because when he does that out of this formation, it's almost always this play. We're talking super, super detailed stuff. I bet you that's what Kuechly's great at identifying.
Yeah. We'll have to swing back with him after he retires in, 6 or 7 years or so. But, I mean, he's the best. That's why he's number one on this list. And like I always say, you know, if you're watching a Panthers game that's not on HD, you know, some of these passing plays,
he just
looks like a defensive back out there.
Who's watching these on not HD? I don't even know where you'd find that.
I sometimes, if my DVR is clogged, I will sometimes tape games in standard definition, and then like a little kid, I will sit like, you know, 2 feet away from the TV
right.
And watch it like that. So it's HD to me.
Sounds like little kids run your household, because the only way your thing could get filled up is if there's a daily 1 hour show that comes on at 11 on PBS that does the parenting for you for a while.
On my DVR.
Yep, there it is.
But I'll have to get, like two magnifying glasses and just.
Well, even then it's blurry. What different? I would think you'd sit further back, actually, if it's non high def, because it'd be so blurry.
Yeah, but you, I don't know, maybe it's just
psychosomatic. I can't believe we're even discussing this.
Not psychosomatic, but psychological, where you, when you can't see it as well, you naturally, well, how are you going to see it better? You're going to move closer. So when I sit back on the couch and watch a game in standard definition, it's like, oh, I can't see what's going on. So I move closer to the TV and you know, if there's a play I need to see the next day, I'll check out NFL Game Pass. But standard definition, it's weird. You get the giant like black outline on the TV, so it's almost like it's just like rubbing it in that you're an idiot. You're watching.
Yeah, oh, you know what? It just occurred to me. I actually did watch one game in standard def. And when I was in Seattle, I watched in the hotel one day, and they didn't have the local CBS. So I did watch Packers Colts in standard def, and it was odd because you couldn't see the running back. They're not even bothering to adjust the perspective anymore for these 4x3 perspective people. So they just I watched the whole game and just didn't see the running back until he got the ball because he's out of the picture. And it wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be. Yeah, I bet you. Let's solicit some tweets. What's your Twitter handle again? At
Well, you can send it to me, ggrambling_si, or you can send it to Andy_Benoit. Send it to both of us.
We want to know if anyone, I bet you not a single listener of ours, watches games on standard definition regularly. Because if you have access to podcasts, you listen to podcasts, you're either an HD generation guy, kid, gal, or you are watching this stuff on your computer, where it's all high definition. Yeah. I bet you we've wasted 5 minutes of people's times right here. Tell us if you watch on standard def. I'd be curious to know. And why? If you do, explain yourself.
Yeah. Paw Patrol. That's really the only reason to watch on standard def. Too much Paw Patrol in your DVR. Thursday Night Football. I would say most Thursday Night Football games I end up watching standard definition. Because I play basketball on Thursdays. I watch the game late.
Depressing.
It is. It really is.
Who else got votes in our thing? In our
yes,
top 10
others
here?
Receiving votes. Like I said, we had 23 this week, so lots more names here. This is starting with number 11, obviously. This is Anthony Barr, Jarrell Freeman, Navarro Bowman, Paul Posluszny, Jordan Hicks, Levante David, Danny Trevathan, Nigel Bradham, Dion Buchanan, Vontaze Burfict, Benardrick McKinney, Deion Jones, and Eric Kendricks. Anyone stand out to you, Andy?
A lot of those guys stand out to me, but I don't want to. They're all nice players. Some of those guys, to me, are not remotely close to top 10, but I don't want to rip them. You'd have to rip them to say that. I don't want to do that.
All right. We both, Barr was, well, obviously he was 11 on the list.
Yeah, he's not one of those. He's top 10. He could be. Yeah, he's top 10. But some of those other guys, they're not every down players, or there were some good, certainly not great linebackers that you just called out there.
You and I both had Anthony Barr literally number 10 on our list.
Yeah, I like Anthony Barr.
Don't get too brazen with your Anthony Barr is obviously top 10.
Oh, well, I had him top 10, though. You just said.
You did.
When I say obviously, I mean like he's like it's legitimate to have a he's in that discussion. Now is he 10?
Yes.
Is he 12? I mean,
okay.
But he's not a guy that teams in a certain playoff game last year game plan specifically to attack in coverage.
Yeah,
like
your
maybe
tone,
like
your
maybe
tone
one of the Houston
suggesting.
Linebackers.
Yes, that is true.
Who's not a bad player? He's just not top 10.
He's a limited player. Limited skill set.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's the show. We've got one more to go here. Quarterbacks next week. That'll certainly that's always something.
Yeah, we may want to consider doing top 15 on that.
Yeah, all right. We can do
that.
I
guess it doesn't work for our format maybe.
Man, could we get the voiceover guy to do 11 through 15? That's just madness. I don't know if we can.
That would be. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up for this week here. Like we said, keep the mailbag questions coming. Giant mailbag show coming. And like we keep saying, if you want your question 100% guaranteed on the show, leave it in an iTunes review. If you don't subscribe already, please subscribe. We have lots of avenues you can subscribe. Most people do the old Apple Podcasts iTunes thing. But, yeah, lots of places you can get this show. For now, thank you to Katie Sharp, our researcher, making us sound smart this week. Does really great work. And, of course, thank you, as always, to producer Lou Pellegrino and editor Chris Basil, all the folks at Digital Media who make this show sound as good as it does. Most of all, thank you guys for listening to this show. As always, we appreciate it. We appreciate all the great questions and feedback that come in. We do. We have literally the smartest listeners in the football podcast world. I will make that claim, and I do not feel it is a hot take. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and of course this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys with the quarterbacks next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.